I'm Jessica Harris, and welcome to my welcome table. I'm going to be at the welcome table. Gather round this special table. It's scarred with memories, pitted with burn spots from hot skillets, and decorated with moisture rings from frosty glasses of lemonade, beer bottles, bourbon and ginger ale, and untold goblets of red wine. This table will be our flying carpet as we travel around the world. I'll share some of my secret spots. We'll meet new friends and reconnect with old ones. Sometimes, the table will be covered with fine Porthot linen and my mother's bone china, and we'll sup on caviar and champagne. Other times, we'll cover it with yesterday's news and hanker down for a crawfish boil or a lobster supper. Whatever the meal, by the end of our time together, we'll have shared some special friends, sacred spots, and the food, drink, and music that connects them. So come, join me at my welcome table.
My name is Gail McDonough. I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is Nancy Harrell, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is Kerry Moody, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
My name is Daphne Durbin, and I'm sitting at the welcome table.
I'm Betty Fussell, and I, too, am sitting at the welcome table.
Compass Point, 13.04 degrees south, 38.48 degrees west, Bahia, Brazil. It's interesting how a place enters your consciousness. I first heard of the city by the bay that is formerly known as Salvador de Bahia de Todos os Santos in a cartoon when I was a child. I don't remember whether it was one of those nights in Adventureland on the Walt Disney show or where it actually took place, but sitting in my living room with my parents, I was suddenly thrust into the storybook world of dancing where tambourines did virtuoso solos. It was Three Caballeros, a Disney salute to Pan-American life. In it, I was introduced to Bahia by a cigar-smoking parrot known as Joe Carioca, who asked Donald Duck, "Have you been to Bahia?" Years later, the same question would become one that I'd ask friends as I tried to explain my love for the city by the bay. It was only years, many years later, that I actually arrived in the city. By then, I'd traveled to various spots in Europe and had even been to the African continent. But nothing prepared me for the assault on the senses that was Bahia. I was first invited to Brazil as a travel writer in the late 1970s. The group I was with entered the country at Manaus on the mighty Amazon after a longish flight from Miami, where we had assembled. There, I saw the opera house that spoke to the wealth of the rubber barons of that city, got to swim, and even have my first caipirinha in a tributary to the Amazon called an igarapó. Thank goodness no piranhas there. Brazil started out just fine. Loved Manaus. Brasilia was less enchanting, although I did enjoy the modernist architecture of the city. But the next stop was Bahia, and it was there that I would lose my heart and soul. Joe Carioca was right. Have you been to Bahia? If not, go. Bahia, Brazil is the African heart, soul, and stomach of the country. It immediately became my Bahia. My Bahia is a city formed by Africa where connections with the mother continent have survived the bonds of enslavement. Walking on the rounded cobblestones of the old city that date back to the 16th century, it is impossible not to be struck by the city's conjoining of Africa and Portugal. In 1965, a travel writer announced that the city's population was more than 67% of African descent. Today, it would probably be acceptable to say that while those numbers may have changed slightly with the recent influx of tourists, folks from elsewhere in Brazil, and snowbirds from the north, the influence of Africa on the culture of the city remains 100%. My Bahia is one where the survivors of the fetid holes of slave ships became the first Afro-Brazilians, but where the touch of the mother continent still survives and thrives. The markets of my Bahia are kin to their cousins on the Gulf of Benin on the other side of Atlantic. My Bahia is a city where women carry their market purchases on their heads, and where the market stalls in the streets reveal faces that would be at home on either side of the Atlantic. This Bahia is a city of mystery, where all is not what it seems. A city where nightly drums still beat to call on African gods that come to celebrate in houses of worship called candomblé. Over the years, I have explored much of the city, making friends and putting down roots. I was fortunate enough to first be in the city at a time of transition, and so I met the old guard. I shared a cocktail or two with Jorge Amado, the city's writer laureate, and his beloved wife Zelia. I sat in the studio of the artist Caribe and watched him sketch Bahian women with a facility born of deep love. And I have made Wednesday obligations to the Orisha Shango with Pierre Verger, the heir to a French pharmaceutical fortune who spent his life documenting the connections between Africa and the Americas. And I almost bought a small house near Pelourinho with an impluvium from the artist Chico Santos. My tropical house is now in New Orleans, but my love for Bahia remains a constant in my life. It is a city of mystery and magic. But also, it is a city of food.
No tabuleiro da Baiana tem vatapá, oi caruru, mungunzá, tem umbu pra ioiô.
Bahian food is legendary throughout Brazil, and the nation's gastronomes regard it as some of the country's best. With ingredients like the fiery hot Malagueta chilies, called pimienta Malagueta, or other ones called pimienta do cheiro, peppers with an aroma or a savor, coconut milk, and orange-hued palm oil. It has a taste that harks back to the African continent and was developed and perfected by the enslaved Africans who worked on the plantations that dotted the hinterlands. It's always been a locavore cuisine that makes abundant use of the fish and fowl that abound. The city's cuisine is celebrated widely by its artists. Painters, like Caribe, sketch Bahian women in full lace skirt finery. Did I mention the traditional dress? It's glorious and in fact inspired the dresses of Carmen Miranda. And those ladies stead out into the street in their fabulous lace garments to sell street food.
O que é que a Baiana tem?
O que é que a Baiana tem?
Tem torso de seda, tem.
Tem
brinco de ouro, tem. Colares de ouro, tem.
Tem
bata rendada, tem.
Tem
saia engomada,
tem.
Sandália enfeitada,
tem.
Tem pano da costa,
tem.
Pulseira de ouro,
tem.
E tem graça como ninguém.
It's a city where recipes are turned into popular songs. Dorival Caymmi's Vatapá actually is a recipe that can almost be followed in the making of the traditional dish. Where else do writers write of a cuisine with a joy that is palpable? Amado was perhaps the city's most famous gastronome. Born the son of a cocoa planter in Ilhéus in 1912, Amado published his first novel at the age of 19. His early novels dealt with the wide divisions between the upper and lower classes in Brazil and were a plea for social justice. But in the 1950s, he began to explore the culture of his native Bahia in a lighter vein, looking particularly at the Afro-Bahian heritage of the state. In his later works, he wrote about the city's food with a love and a gusto that are captivating. Writer Isabel Allende, in an article entitled The Seductive Power of Food, speaks of the foods of Amado's Bahia, saying, and I quote, "They are sensual dishes that invite slow enjoyment and pure pleasure in company. Their variety seems infinite, but the common characteristic is an Olympian disregard for cholesterol and calories. Coconut milk, palm oil called dendê, spices, seafoods, mandioca, also known as cassava, sugar in lethal quantities, and fried foods of every kind."
Traigo os quindites de Yaya. Comei, oh comei, oh comer. Os quem dizia já comei, comei, comei. Os quem dizia já comei, comei, comei. Os quem dizia já comei que faz chorar.
A recipe for quindim, a favorite dessert. Indeed, it was the dessert sung about in the duet between Donald Duck and the Brazilian singer in the Three Caballeros that I'd seen decades ago, can call for 16 egg yolks along with sugar and butter. At times, it seems as though the Bahian culinary philosophy is quite simply stated, if it tastes delicious, it can't possibly hurt you. The traditional foods of Bahia, dishes with names with African sonorities like karuru, vatapá, mugunza, and efo, bring into play African culinary techniques like steaming in leaves, frying in deep oil. There are composed rice dishes and an abundant use of peppery sauces. Slow cooking and the paradigm of a soupy stew over a starch are all manners that are preferred for food preparation. Many of the cooks of the Casas Grandes or the Great Houses brought more than technique with them. They also brought, in their heads and their hearts and their hands, recipes that were traditional for the placation of the diverse pantheon of gods, or orisha, of the Afro-Brazilian religion known as Candomblé. These orisha are demanding and gourmet gods who have their preferred dishes and their preferred methods of preparation. In fact, I once saw a recipe that said, take 100 okra pods, cut each okra pod 10 times, cut each seed 10 times, you get the idea. Using the African ingredients like okra and yam, dried smoked shrimp, and bright orange palm oil, they recreated the dishes of their past. In the candomblé houses of Bahia, this cooking and the particular recipes of the gourmet gods is passed down over generations by the worshippers. This is probably the only religion where there is even a title for the mistress of the ritual kitchen, the Yabase. Outside of the ritual precincts, this cooking has become the hallmark of all that is the best of the traditional food of Bahia. Dishes like karuru and vatapá and moquecas of fish, shrimp, or spiny lobster are rich with seafood, perfumed with coconut milk, and brilliantly colored with red palm oil. They are all dishes for the gods, particularly when they are served with the cassava porridge known as angu. It is, though, not only the dishes of the gods that migrated to the Bahian table. Ogun, the warrior god of the Yoruba, whose totem is iron, loves beans, and black beans are his favorite. And in fact, his ritual dish has become the national dish of Brazil, nourishing prince and pauper alike. Yansan, the warrior consort of the Orisha Xangô, is another food lover who has left her mark on the palate of the country. Her ritual dish is the acarajé. No food is more iconic than Bahia's acarajé. A savory black-eyed pea fritter, and actually the bean is more similar to a cowpea, and in Portuguese is called a feijão fradinho. It's a fritter that is prepared from beans that are soaked, then skinned, then ground into a paste which is seasoned, and then fried to a gilded turn in red palm oil. When done, the fritter is split and slathered with a paste of well-seasoned dried smoked shrimp that's called vatapá. It's then served up as the city's classic street food. The acarajé seems at times to encapsulate the entire history of the city, for in truth, it is no more than an acará, a white bean fritter usually prepared by the Yoruba people of southwestern Nigeria in the same manner. They, though, don't add the dried shrimp paste and don't slice them open. Even the name is retained in Bahia. But instead of being called simply acará, across the ocean it is transformed into acarajé, an elision of the Yoruba words acará, meaning the fritter, and ijé, meaning a meal. A meal of acra. The acarajé are so popular that they are sung about in a popular song, the refrain of which states quite simply, everybody loves acarajé.
10 horas da noite, na rua deserta, a preta mercando, parece um lamento.
I'm Dana Hahn.
I'm Christina Hahn.
And we're both at the welcome table.
Hi, Dana and Christina. How are you?
Doing fine. Thanks, Jessica.
My friends Dana and Christina Hahn run the Cafe Carmo on Julia Street in New Orleans, and that's exactly where I head when I'm looking for a Brazilian food fix. So, Christina, how do you make those acarajé?
We make with black-eyed peas. We soak the black-eyed peas, and then we grind them, and mix with spices, and then we deep fry. And then when they deep fry, we make this vatapá, something that is called vatapá, that is like a shrimp, dry shrimp, and fresh shrimp with almond and cashews and peanuts paste. And then we fill the acarajé with that, and we, on top, we sprinkle more dry shrimp and serve with the vinagrette, that is a kind of salsa fresca.
With such a love of food, it's not surprising that the streets are filled with it. From the baianas de tabuleiro, who set up shop and sell acarajé and other tidbits both sweet and savory from trays on the street. They sell at bus stops, street corners, and seemingly everywhere. In a classic pattern of upward mobility, some of them move from street vending to small restaurants, some of which have grown into some of the city's best. Two of them can be seen in the Mercado Modelo, the model market, on the second floor, and tourists and locals alike stop there to eat. It's funny because the hostesses from Maria de San Pedro and Camafue de Oshosi vie for clients in a competitive pavan each time a potential diner arrives. O Tempero de Dada is another spot serving traditional specialties that's always popular. And then there is SENAC, the government tourism and culinary school that has a restaurant offering the classics that's located on Pelourinho. Pelourinho is the heart of the old city. In colonial times, it was the site of the pillory. In my early Bahian days, Pelourinho was a mix of gentrified and marginal, where one block could lead to great beauty and a wrong turn could put your life in jeopardy. Today, Pelourinho is at the heart of the tourist zone, filled with shops, boutique hotels, and restaurants. Other restaurants around the city include Yemanya, which offers seafoods as befitting a spot named for the Orisha of the Seas. It may even have served as the model for the restaurant in the film Woman on Top, a romp about food and love starring a young Penelope Cruz. I'm such a fan of Bahian food that I need my acarajé and my moqueca from time to time, even if I can't take the 10-hour flight. I've therefore found spots where I can indulge. Via Brazil on 46th Street in New York's Little Brazil, where I've spotted Caetano Veloso and Brazilian impresario Harold da Costa, who played the original Orpheus in Vinicius de Moraes' play Orfeo na Praia before it became Black Orpheus, were both dining there. I love the spot because they know I want my batida de maracujá, sem muito açúcar, without much sugar, and that I need plenty of mollo vinaigrette, a wonderful savory vinaigrette that's almost like a salsa fresca, for my rice and beans. The girl from Ipanema lives in Rio. In Bahia, the beach to go to is Itapuã.
Velho calção de banho, o dia pra vadiar.
Itapuã is a place to spend a day. With luck, you'll find vendors selling pichichingas, tiny little white bait that can be deep fried and make a perfect lunch. You can also find one of the strolling vendors and have a beer, a cerveja, estupidamente gelado, stupidly chilled, or nose-burningly chilled, or wander into a beachside bar and order a caipirinha.
Mas a marvada da cachaça não me deixa em paz. Não me deixa em paz. Não me deixa em paz.
My friend Dana Hahn makes them in New Orleans too.
At Cafe Carmel, we do them a little bit differently. We try to maintain, you know, as much authenticity in most of our dishes, but we like to give our own little flair. One thing that we do differently, you know, when you quarter the lime and you muddle it with the sugar, we will stick the ice right in there, which you find in Brazil. That's not uncommon. Because it, in addition to crushing the ice and slivering it a little bit, it actually helps to get more of the flavor of the lemon out. We also use a tiny bit. And this might be sacrilege for some people, but we use a tiny bit of agave. And we do that because it tends to take the edge off of the sugar a little bit and make it not quite so bitter. So we're not using quite as much sugar. We're replacing some of that with agave.
Then it's back to Bahia, back into the city, and back to Pelourinho. And my evenings in Bahia and my Bahian trip would be incomplete without a pilgrimage where I recall the Pelourinho of my youth. Then, it was not the tourist zone that it has become today. But that sort of marginal, not always safe place. There, my refuge was the Cantina de Lua. Owner, Clarindo Silva, whippet thin and always dressed in immaculate white, provided a haven of calm within the rowdy zone. It wasn't always safe, and some of these denizens of the Cantina de Lua looked a little dubious after the sun went down, but it was a place to gather with friends for a cheap meal of beans and rice and the sun-dried meat known as charqui. Once, I had a farewell party there that appalled some of my more uptown friends, but they arrived and enjoyed and returned. At midnight, every night, Clarindo Silva would read his poetry over a loudspeaker into the square. An artist's offering to the night and an offering to honor the dancing gods of the city that has claimed my soul. So, until next time.
Good and greasy when I'm gone, gone, gone. Keep my skillet good and greasy.